Stai ascoltando i podcast di Radio Bue, la web radio degli studenti dell'Università di Padova, www.radiobue.it.
Radio Didattica. Contenitore multimediale di approfondimenti formativi.
Podcast per l'esame del corso di istituzioni politiche nordamericane. Professor Tonello, anno accademico 2009-2010. Secondo podcast, il potere legislativo.
Today, Americans are regarded as worshippers of their constitution, but this basic document was the result of a number of compromises. And in Philadelphia, it was very difficult to reach a compromise on some topics. The 13 states were very different from one another. There were slave states in the south, there were free states in the north and in the middle Atlantic. There were large states like Virginia, Massachusetts, and very small states with a tiny population like New Jersey or Georgia. There were states with an important shipping activity, commercial states in the north and in the center, and there were agriculture states where almost the only source of revenue was the slave labor. All this compelled the delegates to face great difficulties in writing a document that could accommodate everybody. The first point was what to do with Congress. The line of discussion was created by the so-called Virginia Plan, presented by the governor of Virginia, Edmund Randolph. This plan was based on the idea of a Congress with two chambers, a Senate and a House. There should have been an executive, but the plan did not specify how to elect it, and a federal judicial system. This Virginia plan strengthened the competencies of the federal government. It gave it the possibility of imposing taxes, raising armies, conclude treaties, and gave it the most power in international affairs and also economic affairs. However, this plan created a government much too strong for the taste of some delegates called anti-federalists. These delegates feared a powerful government. They thought it would become the kernel of a new aristocracy or even a monarchical restoration in the United States. Nevertheless, the Virginia Plan was an important first step, and on some topics an agreement was reached rather quickly. For example, there was a large consensus on the fact that the lower house, called the House of Representatives, should have been popularly elected. Popularly in this context does not mean a universal suffrage, universal voting rights. Of course, slaves did not vote, nor did vote women or people without property. Only white males with some kind of property were allowed to vote. However, in many states, the requirement of property were very low, and small artisans or tradesmen usually were able to vote, at least in northern states. If on the topic of the House there was consensus, it was not so concerning the Senate. The delegates were convinced that bicameralism, having two houses in the legislative body, was a wise solution. They, of course, were thinking to the British House of Lords. However, the House of Lords in the United Kingdom is a hereditary body. Members are there because they are the sons and grandsons of other peers. There was and there is no aristocracy in the United States, and therefore it was impossible to create a House of Lords. So the discussion about the Senate was very long and difficult, because there was consensus on the fact that it should have been a more narrow body composed by wise men, statesmen dedicated to the public service, and at the same time it should represent the 13 states. The House should represent the population at large. In the name of federalism, the Senate should represent the states per se. However, in the Virginia Plan and in the mind of people like Madison, Morris, and Hamilton, the Senate should have states represented according to their population, like the House. So Virginia, Massachusetts, Pennsylvania would have had many more senators than Delaware, Georgia, or New Jersey. This proposition was non-acceptable for the small states. In the convention, the states had one vote each, and the bloc of small states forged an unbreakable alliance against any proposition of a Senate where the states would have no equal representation. The six small states were a majority in the convention, and they made plain in different occasions that the condition to join the new federation was equal representation in the Senate. And so in the end the Senate had equal representation, two senators for each state. Even today the 50 states of the American Federation has elect 100 senators. Senators at that time were not elected but appointed by the legislatures of their respective states to strengthen the link between senators themselves and the original states. So the legislative body was composed by a house. The first house had 65 representatives, and a senate, the first senate, had 26 senators. Another long discussion and fierce political battles happened concerning the election of the executive. The executive was a particularly touchy problem, because at that time Congress was not considered a body in permanent session. The usual way of functioning was a session of 3 or 4 months, and then representatives should go back to their states where most of their political activity took place. How many people were necessary to elect a representative? The relations between the states were, of course, very much influenced by this problem. Having 10 representatives or 2 representatives was not the same thing. And the southern states feared that northern states would have a majority in Congress, and this majority would vote bills ending or at least limiting slavery. For this reason, the southern states obtained that the number of representatives they were entitled to should include not only white people voting, but also part of the black slaves. So, for this reason, the Constitution had a strange formula, that is, the population necessary to elect the representatives should include 3/5 of all other persons living in the states. All other persons was the euphemism not to call the slaves. This amounted to an over-representation of southern states, and it opened the way to a domination by southern states of the federal government that lasted almost 80 years. For the entire first part of the life of the Republic, between the ratification of the Constitution and the civil, southern states elected most presidents, appointed most judges of the Supreme Court, and had a majority in Congress.
Radio didattica. Contenitore multimediale di approfondimenti formativi.
Stai ascoltando i podcast di Radio Bue, la web radio degli studenti dell'Università di Padova, www.radiobue.it.